Hello and welcome to Hey Art, What's Good? We are a podcast based in the northeast of England where we like to see what's good with art. My name's Alice.
And my name's Rosie.
And we have a guest today. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name's Eleanor and I'm head of programme at MIMA, Middlesbrough Institute of Modern Art.
Yeah, it's nice to have you back. If you remember, we had Eleanor on the podcast, I think it was last year. I want to say last year.
I feel like nothing's happened in 2020, so we can just safely say it happened in 2019.
No, that's true. So you're a professional at this point, Eleanor. So you might remember something like do on Hey Art, What's Good is to kind of check in and see what's good with each other or if something good's happened recently. And for the most part, that's been like TV wrecks and stuff. So have you got anything good that you'd like to share to get us started?
I mean, I guess the good, like the really good thing is being able to wear shorts all the time.
I can support that.
A lot is not that amazing. That is one great moment.
Truly is the little things.
Exactly. But also having my first takeaway coffee. Too
exciting. Oh, I am very jealous. That's all I want in this world. I just want like a nice flat white from somewhere.
Was your order? What'd you go for? Yeah, I was gonna say you can't just go for a normal coffee. You've got to go for something a bit extra, a little bit special.
Yeah, it's such a nice cafe. Amazing. And they do like locally roasted coffee that is just delicious. I was in tears. It was so good.
Brought to tears. I love it.
3 months no coffee. I mean, I've had coffee at home, but it's different, right?
Yeah,
it's not the same. And like, I don't want to get like a whole like Nespresso machine or like barista kit. I just want someone else to make a nice coffee for us.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a really good thing. Rosie, what about you?
Ooh, well, I want to copy you because I had my first iced coffee. But then I feel like I'm robbing that off Alice because she's been making iced coffees.
So for the benefit of Eleanor, who's on the video cam, it's a very nice iced coffee that I'm having right now.
I don't want to, because now I'm like, I want to talk about Alice's good thing because she's been using like a cocktail shaker to make her iced coffees. Like, it's legit. But what my good thing with my iced coffee that I had, because I'm a bit of a environmental activist, eco warrior, so I have to reuse everything, and going out to get coffee, you have to use the to-go cups now. Like, I couldn't take my cup for them to fill because of contamination and stuff, but I managed to use, so do you know those cups where they're like a cup and they have that dome on top with the straw?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
that is the perfect thing to grow avocados in.
Whoa.
Like, if you don't, you just turn it upside down so that it's like a bowl at the top with a, like, so it's like a bowl with a hole in the top of the cup. And you just put the seed on there. And then, because I don't want to stick, because I don't have any toothpicks. And I'm not going to go and buy toothpicks just to grow avocados. Because you're meant to like suspend it in water. I'll put an Instagram, like it'll be on the story. Because like
hand action going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just
I am so bad for that. If you ever listen to this podcast, just assume I'm flailing my limbs.
Brewing in the air, yeah.
Very gestural, yeah. So that's, yeah, I think in the coffee theme, coffee, plants, come together, recycling. Hey. That's what's good with me.
That's pretty good.
Alice, what about you? Sorry if I've robbed you of yours.
No, that's all right. Mine wasn't going to be that. Mine's fairly food related. It's a YouTube channel that I've stumbled across recently. It's called Tasting History. It's the cutest thing. It's this like dude in California who was like obsessed with like medieval and ancient recipes. So he just kind of makes them. Like, it's like literally like recipe books from like 15 whatever. So he's like, let's make this really old like tart that King James II would have eaten or something like that. And it's just this like really enthusiastic Californian guy who loves like England. And it's just a treat, honestly. So I'd really recommend that for some good time watching.
That sounds class. Yeah.
On a similar theme, Ugly Delicious on Netflix. Such an amazing show. It's all about food, but it is actually about like, I guess like where cultures get kind of hybridized and borrowed from and stolen from and
yeah,
and it's just so interesting because it's all through food. which is a great
movie.
I love that.
Yeah. Oh, sounds sick.
Because I love how, like, definitely, oh, I love food stuff. Because I love that, like, it's very much comparable to art in the way that we, like, understand our past through artifact. Oh, we understand a lot about our past through food. And it's like a storytelling device, isn't it?
It's a great way in for everyone, I think.
Because everyone loves food. Amazing. Like, who doesn't love eating?
I do. Something else I love to segue... is the Mima. There we go.
Yeah. Segway queen.
So we've got Elna on today to kind of just have a chat and see what the Mima's been up to. Because I've said a few times recently with the weather being nice, oh, we should just go on like a little trip to like, I don't know, Middlesbrough somewhere. Mm. And every trip to Middlesbrough would not be complete without a little pop into the Mima. Unfortunately, we can't do that right now. So it'd be nice to have a hear about what the Mima team has been up to. So first of all, how are you doing, Elna, and how is everyone at Mima doing? I assume everyone's working from home.
Yeah, everyone's working from home. I mean, I guess the answer to that depends on what day it is. Like, some days have been great, fine. Yeah. Others have been just vaguely mediocre, but some have been pretty bad as well. And I think it's really important to say that because, yeah, it's just taken everyone so much energy to keep working and, you know, like, well, the things I guess that take energy are that there's so much uncertainty. A bit less so now. It feels like we're coming out of some of that in some ways. But yeah, to start with, it was just like, right, we need to plan everything differently. We're not sure what for or when for or, you know, what the plan would be. And how could you have a public building and how could people move around that? And can you move artworks and how many, you know, it's like, so many things. So that's been quite full on. And the team at Mima are just incredible. But yeah, there's been some days where it's like, you know, we meet up in the program team or whatever. And you can just feel that people are really struggling because it's been tough.
This is not what anyone signed up for.
No. I guess it was just so unforeseen for the most part. So yeah, very strange times, but I guess what it has meant is that we've been like really questioning ourselves and digging deep and talking with other people about what is important and what needs to emerge from this, and totally not just doing things as they were done because that's how they were done, because this is a real thing to just, I think, like recalibrate and refresh, renew. Yeah, and slightly shift like some of those sort of concepts and ways of doing things. So that's good. And my colleagues are just incredible. Like, what a team.
So, yeah. We agree.
So yeah, it's a sort of mixed picture.
Oh, well, I mean, it's good to hear that you're not just all planning to be like, right, as soon as museum's going to open, we'll just do it the way it was. So it's exciting. Obviously, so many bad things come out of this, but like I'm excited to see the shift in certain things, because obviously going to a museum or a gallery is usually a very kind of in-person experience, so then you've got to think like to still be like a useful
museum.
That's what the Mima is. You got to think how can we do that. And recently you've been outputting quite a lot of digital content, I want to say more than ever before, really. Would that be right?
Or in a more noticeable way at the very least, because obviously all galleries have to have that like digital content, but this has been like intense in the best way possible.
It has been intense. Too intense, but best way possible. We're actually today just prepping the 12th edition of Mimazina,
which is very excited to talk about,
and it is full on, like,
magazine
every week, and and not just from content that, you know, comes from within the team, but from things that people are sending in or suggesting. It's a lot of work.
I can imagine.
You know, people, all different members of the team have been writing and recording like reflections on the collection, and even just doing that, like the audio or preparing a text for that. Again, it's like, as you guys know, because you do this work all the time, there's a huge amount of behind the scenes work in terms of research, prep, editing, checking. And a lot of the times, kind of tiny things like, do we have the copyright for that image from the collection? And have you got...
Oh, God, yeah.
We have, even though we haven't got all of the files remotely. And, you know, so there's like all these things that mean, yeah, it's been a very different way of working. But also like a really different way of thinking about community and audience. And I guess one of the difficult and sad things is that we know loads of people aren't online and aren't accessing lots of the stuff we're doing. So then how to think around that and continue some of those really close like conversations. So having phone calls with people, or even we've just started this new series, which is Doorstep Portraits, which is exactly as it sounds. It's just like a distanced hello and a snap of the person or what they're up to, a bit of a kind of checking in.
That's adorable. Yeah, I love it. Really,
because so many people that we work with live in very close proximity to Mima, but suddenly like, you all just feel quite separated out. And another thing we've done is around with the Mima Zina, we've shared it physically. So through the local paper, it's gone to thousands of homes, and we're just arranging with Redcar and Cleveland Council for it to go out to,
like,
through their shielding services. So it's just trying to...
That is cool.
Yeah, trying to think around some of that, the barriers, I suppose. But yeah, it's made us think really in like really exciting and different ways about how can you connect with people? And also, I suppose, like continuing the ethos that a lot of the MIMA programs have, where it's not just a one-way dialogue. It's not about, you know, us just projecting something out and somebody passively reading or consuming it, but how can you actually make a dialogue and other people's voices are shared through platforms and, like, yeah, discussion happens week to week. Mm-hmm. So I guess a lot of what we've done is like an excuse to be in touch with people. It's like the reason to have a chat. Because otherwise it's also quite weird. Like, people don't really have much news, or they don't, you know, they might not feel like what they've got to say is that important, because there's not been a huge amount going on for some people. There's been loads for others. So it's like just sort of checking in, catching up with people, and I guess like trying to use some of the digital spaces, which is a weird thing to say in itself, or the kinds of conversations that would happen at community day, like in the gardening group or at cloth club, or and for people to like be part of something. That's so important, right?
Exactly. I was just about to say, definitely, the thing that I am mourning during quarantine for the MIMA is that you have such a very a successful sense of community, because you have, like as you said, like workshops and talks and the community lunches and all sorts of activities all of the time, and it for people, for all different people. Just that's what I really like about it, because obviously you've got students and artists and creative people, but I think the MIMA is fantastic at getting people in who might not otherwise feel comfortable to approach an art space, because it doesn't just feel like a crusty old art space. It feels like there's things happening that are relevant to Middlesbrough. You know, very, it's important. And you're right, taking it into a digital realm is just, it's just different. It doesn't have that, because I'm a very like physical person. I don't love talking over Messenger, or I hate emails, like all this stuff. And I am so much better face to face. And I know personally, like, I would be deterred from maybe approaching online things, but it's about how do we make it not scary? Because it is a scary time, and this is when people most need comfort and potentially most need community, and they might not have it elsewhere. So it's been really heartwarming to see everything that you have been putting out there. And it's amazing to hear that you'd like, this is a fantastic opportunity to re-strategize. I think art galleries and institutions can be so much more, and MIMA being a lead example of that. And I've also been thinking, in light of kind of Black Lives Matter and all the stuff that's going on as well, you know, that colonial history that galleries have, and is this the time where we can really overcome that and like reset the gallery, if that makes sense? So it's really reassuring to see, well, there's at least one gallery who's kind of making it very obvious. I'm sure other galleries are doing this too. But the thing with MIMA is it's so obvious. It's so clear. It's so transparent that things are being put out there. So there's still that sense of community. But yes, unfortunately, what are we going to do? We're all quarantined. But that's the thing I missed when I was like, I want to go to MIMA. I want to physically be there.
And I guess that's another thing that we're aware of is like when we do reopen, I hope and I think there will be a real appetite for the kind, like the space of MIMA and, you know, the kinds of artworks and displays that you can encounter there, because there's been such a sort of sensory deficit for so many people. And I think just being with things that are made, that are tactile, that have colours, surfaces, materiality, I hope that will be a really positive, like a re-engagement with art on its own terms as the thing in front of you, as well as the layers and the stories around it, but really like focusing back in on
being present.
I think that's really like that's an opportunity for spaces like MIMA, and we have to do. You know, we have to be that space for more people, because there will be lots of places that can't reopen in the same way or that aren't accessible. Like if you really love going to gigs, that's not open for quite a long time, or maybe not ever in quite the same way, but for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think museums and galleries have got this really interesting role, which is about maybe people who didn't think they wanted to go there would, because it's a safe or, you know, like careful space that you could re-enter.
Mm-hmm.
That's free, that doesn't have a commercial agenda. You know, it's really important that it's like a really public, open space.
Yeah. I like that you use the word safe there, because I've never thought of it until you've just said that now. But I think that is what I like about galleries. It's a non-commercial safe space. No one's trying to sell me anything. It's just a place to express yourself and express your opinions freely and safely. So and I think we're missing a lot of that. I think there's a lot of tension, and I love what you said about being present with a physical thing, because how cool would it be if some artists start doing some really tactile things, because we can't touch each other, so let's touch art instead. Because it's like, that would be the biggest flip, wouldn't it? Because we could normally touch each other and we're never allowed to touch art. Well, let's just do the little flippity flop.
Okay, so you're going to commission a handling collection, Rosie.
Yep.
Oh my God.
Partnership with Hey Art, What's Good. Watch this space, guys.
For the art school, you know, like, MIMA runs an art school as part of the university, and it's going to be really interesting to see what will the students and artists be making after and will that be, I mean, I've already seen it like on people's work online, things that people have been doing really inventively with what they can do at home or without a lot of resources or money around them, which is how a lot of artists work anyway. But I think there'll be, I mean, certainly in like sort of critical theory and philosophical terms, there'll be like a huge interest in touch and tactile things and all of that. But I think also it probably will affect how people make and what they make and what can you access, like, you know, what equipment will you be able to use, or will you be able to work collaboratively, or so I just it's like a huge moment of shift, isn't it?
I wonder if it'll be like in a few like years or decades time, it'll be like a recognizable like art movement, like the post-corona, like the post-quarantine art movement. Obviously so many like notable movements have happened because of like socio-political kind of things in the past, so I wonder if there'll be like a very like a kind of overarching style or like theme or something.
I always think about that.
I think you will see so like definitely sort of trends or like shared concerns, but I also think from Black Lives Matter, you know, there's so much when you look back to like social movements in the 60s and the civil rights movement and the art that comes out of that, it's the art is so important within that. And I think we'll see that again. But one of the interesting things is that we're being challenged now, and we're challenging ourselves that it's not, this should not be the labor of artists, and particularly artists of color. Like, it has to be a shared change and a shared concern, and the institutions need to change with that. You know, I think for quite a long time, a lot of places have, or, you know, like, I've noticed that there are Black artists and Asian artists and artists of color to show, and that people are showing in their high profile programs, but that we actually need to shift the workforce. We need to shift, like, the structures and the much more kind of systemic things within the institutions. And I guess how that plays out, as you were saying, I mean, it's going to take a long time for real change to happen, but it does have to happen, and this is the moment. So yeah, from like every angle, things need to be thought very carefully about and addressed. But I guess at MIMA, we're always very wary of like knee-jerk reactions and performing something. We were very cautious, I think, to like really, really embody it and live it and do it.
Yeah.
Not just have it as like a layer. But to
look what we did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess that's where real change happens, but it looks slower. It takes longer to sort of
cement change.
Yeah, exactly. And make that visible in different ways.
Yeah.
Got to do the doing. It's got to actually be happening. You do,
definitely. I'm excited to, I mean, hopeful as well to see all the like major and minor, any institution like permanently change for the better in the coming like months and years and stuff.
Oh yeah, I'm sick to death. And it's Pride Month as well. And I'm just sick of like, Sainsbury's can just piss off, or whoever it is, they're just the first name that I pulled out the air. But like, if, I don't care that you care about like queer people for a month, because I care the rest of the time, and maybe like step it up, come on. And like, it's the exact same thing, like all these, because I hate fast fashion, because again, I love the planet, and yeah, like all these in like environmental issues are the exact, they're the same issues as race issues, and they're the same issues as gender and sexuality, and it's all the same issues, but like just branded differently and different, slightly different outcomes, but the system is the same, the system of oppression. And I'm just, and yeah, it's like, I want to, we've always thought art galleries are the place to, well, they're an educational space. They're a space to challenge people's ideas and thought processes, and to challenge systems and strategize in a creative way, in a safe place, as we said, strategize other options. And it's almost like the world being on pause could be an opportunity for the creative thinkers to like, well, now we've had this chance to stop. Let's, when we start up again, put it in a certain direction and channel that energy into how we actually want it to be. And it stopped, I hope that this quarantine and this global pause can kind of stop that whole fad of, yeah, like a month for Pride or a month for Black History. Like, no, how about all the time? Because it is all the time. And I would love to do like a full episode on like the colonial histories of the art institution. But we have mentioned before with MIMA, when we did a wonderful interview about modernism. What was it?
Black Artists and Modernism.
Black Artists and Modernism, the MIMA collection. That was a fab exhibition, and I'm excited for more. Because we had the chance to address that there. And it's this idea that obviously, for if you're new to the podcast listeners, I'm going to give you like the cliff notes, that museums and galleries are colonial institutions, because when we had a colony, many colonies, we'd like go to places, take all their lovely things and put them in like the British Museum and take their treasures and claim them for our own. And then it perpetuates a lot of, you know, issues around equality and lack of it.
Yes.
And it tends to be, you know, white men who, historically have been artists and exhibit in art and have money and all this, that just isn't relevant anymore. And yet we still see it over and over again. And that's just not something I've ever really noticed from the Mima. So I just have so much trust for the Mima, a lot of respect for the Mima. And it's not just saying that because you're here.
A lot of pressure, guys.
No. It's meant to relieve pressure. You've said you're making those steps and I trust you.
But I guess the other thing about what you're saying is that there are those more tangible and like visible ways that museums have these colonial histories. But there's also all the, there's like many more complicated layers to do with where the money from colonialism and the slave trade and the enslavement of people and the like the wealth that was accumulated through that and then, you know, actually is still accumulated today through many of the structures that still exist that are like the legacy of all of that. It's the wealth and the kind of that built the infrastructures that we all live with now, including kind of public museums and galleries, the sort of foundations of the universities, the industry that like drove the Northeast and drives it now in different ways. That it's so, those layers are so complicated and they're so present in everything, but they are often, or they're not really thought about, or they become kind of invisible because they're everything. So there's like the thing you can point to and go, yes, that dock is associated with the slave trade, or that person, you know, Colston, a good obvious example. But then there are all of these like things that are more invisible, but in a way more insidious or more troubling, because they have these veneers of like respectability. So yeah, that's like just my addition to that.
I love it. This is why I needed to bring it up with you, because I knew you'd say it in an amazingly eloquent way, whereas I just like throw together some information.
Well, I don't know how eloquent, but I think yeah, it's like it's the stuff that we it's been on the agenda for a long time, and it needs now to move into a different space, because we can't just repeat the same things and say, you know, the good stuff and then move on with what people were planning anyway. Anyway, that's you
know. That was quite heavy.
I think everybody's also, you know, there's a huge amount of learning and thinking to do.
Definitely. Well, I mean, as we've said, like about like just all galleries, all spaces for kind of learning and stuff like that. And an exhibition I was really looking forward to seeing, and it literally obviously was about to start when all this happened, is From Where I Stand by Otterbong Nkanga. I did not say that surname right. But I was wondering, because I listened to, it was you and Helen did like a walk around, like it was supposed to be the day before the exhibition opened. So you were walking around the gallery and just talking about what all the things were. I was like, oh, this is so cool. But I mean, I listened to that like 2 days ago. So I was like, well, I can't see it. But I was wondering, would there ever be an opportunity to see it? Like, is it still... I imagine it's all still there in the gallery space, all the works.
Yeah, it's all in the galleries and it looks incredible.
Oh, don't say that. Like
really beautifully cool, airy spaces, which I'm longing for.
Oh, yeah.
It's really, really hot and sticky. I just keep thinking about, yeah, like the volume of space in that gorgeous building. But yeah, the works are there. We've agreed with Otterbong and the lenders and Tate St. Ives, who are our partner on the project, that we can extend the exhibition to the 21st of February.
Yay!
That's so long.
That's brilliant. Yeah,
that's such a long time. Oh my God. Amazing.
We're looking, I mean, I don't know if I'm really supposed to say this, but I think it's probably fair to say we're planning for opening in September.
Okay.
That gives a really good amount of time for people to see the show, because obviously we're planning for far fewer numbers at any one time in the galleries. So we wanted to make sure that, well, a few things, that A, people have the chance to see the work, and that B, we hope that Otterbong might be able to come back to Middlesbrough because she just had such a good time installing and working with us. We really want to do some of the things we've planned around working with some of the students and also doing a public performance in some way. Obviously, that'll look a bit different now. In the galleries, because performance is a really important part of her work and sort of activating the objects in the space. And also because we wanted to, I suppose, like focus our attentions on things that we could do now with the time and the money that we have that will make a big difference to people. So like really thinking about how do we re-engage with communities once we open, but also what are the ways that we can channel some of our budgets into paying artists for things and doing things slightly differently. So rather than sort of plan for lots of exhibitions that not many people might see or that you might have to close again if there's a second lockdown or all of this, we just thought, let's slow things down a bit, use this moment to have Otterbong show on for a really good stretch. And it is just a stunning show. And I think people will really relate to it. And then, you know, like, it's going to take us a long time to work out how a massive exhibition install works. Because when you're moving giant structures around and huge sculptures that weigh a few tons, it's like you need a few people in the space.
Yes.
And close to each other. And all of that needs to be really, really safe and thoughtful. So it's just no point rushing things that take all of our energy away from the important things about, like, you know, working with schools and children and families, working in community spaces, paying artists for projects, imagining new projects with artists. It's like, where do you put your energies, right? And you need to think what's important in this time. So, yeah, that's why we decided to go really long, and I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, that is exciting.
Because that's almost obviously it hasn't technically been opened since the middle of March when it was supposed to be, but that's almost like a full year, which is crazy.
like a long-term residency at Newmont.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds awesome. So I'm glad we can actually go and see it at some point, which is awesome.
Yeah, you have to come by, and it's got beautiful tapestries and sculpture and paintings. So again, like we were saying about that last week.
Oh, lovely.
My heart is cracking into you. I just want to see it right now. On days like today, the sun is shining. It's really warm. This is an art day. This was meant to be an art day today.
Like, the Mima's nice and cool on the inside. Got that sweet air con.
Nice, clean walls. Just tasty.
I love the kind of museum fantasies that are emerging from this time. Who knew?
Yeah.
They're important to us to be in the building. So interesting.
Yeah. There's just something about being physically with people in a creative space and just feeding off their energy. Mm. And that's how I must feel like your team must feel exactly like this, that in the office, like when you're all coming up with ideas and running, even if you're just all doing your own projects, there's an energy in the air where everyone's kind of, it's motivating and it's encouraging. And if you are getting stressed, I think it can like bring everyone down and keep everyone calm. Mm-hmm. When you're working alone at like home, it's just not ideal for like necessarily for a creative, well, for any job really. But I like going into the art gallery for that, like that creative freedom. Oh, can't wait. Yeah. I don't even work at a gallery and I need that.
Well, something I wanted to ask about, like talking about getting that like feedback and stuff and then talking about art with people. I saw like a while ago, like what's the month now? June. So a couple months ago. had a call out for like virtual studio visits. Mm. And I just wanted to know how that went, if that happened. Because it just sounded like a really nice idea.
Yeah, it was really fun. And I guess it's a bit like what you were saying earlier, Rosie, about how visible you make things or how transparent to be about things. Because a lot of the time we're doing studio visits anyway. But, you know, they're like, you don't really broadcast that because, you know, just anyway, for lots of reasons, it's not always the right thing to do. But we just thought, right, well, we've got time as a team. And however much it sometimes feels like you don't really have a lot to say, especially you know, like you feel stressed or pressured, I think just connecting with people and offering a conversation is always a good use of our time as a team. And yeah, we were just really trying to focus in on what have we got and what can we do with the resources we've got, but also who are the people that we really have a really close responsibility to and a sort of, yeah, a role in the lives of. And obviously artists are a really big part of that. So yeah, one of the strands that we've developed is around quite simple ways of, yeah, having some time with artists, but also sort of platforming and profiling their voices and their work. So the studio visits, I don't know how many we've done, but there's been four of us doing them fairly regularly. And yeah, we kind of thought that most people getting in touch would be from the Northeast, but actually it's been really interesting that it's been a national thing. So like lots of
people getting
in touch from all over the country.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And that was really interesting. And basically it's just really nice for us to have conversations about art, right? I mean,
oh yes, really, couldn't agree more.
For that, because a lot of what we do ends up not always being that creative, or it's like about the admin around a project or making sure that someone's fee is paid, or you know, like all
the business stuff. Side.
Yeah. So it just felt like we need some things that we can do now that aren't about, you know, contingent planning and working out when something can happen and then blah blah blah. Mm. So yeah, it's been fun, and people who I've met up with, I think, have found it useful. I mean, it's just like, I think sometimes you just, any of us just need to feel like you're recognized and part of something and that people care, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
To it. And so, yeah, it's some, like, it's just a fresh perspective, I suppose. And sometimes we talked very concretely about like advice on a project or how to write something, or but other times it's just been more rambling and like,
yeah,
how are you doing, and
yeah,
what's
good, you know,
all of these kind of important things.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, lovely. Oh, I'm glad to hear that went well.
Yeah,
it's still going. People can still get in touch and do it.
So lovely.
Anyway, we could share those links, couldn't we?
Yes, I was going to say we'll have all
we
of that on
can.
Our blog posts and everything.
Well, yeah, we've talked about quite a bunch of stuff, but is there anything that you are, like, the Mima is currently working on to come out soon, or is there anything that we haven't talked about that you've been like especially kind of excited about doing while all this has been going on, like anything more exciting than all the cool stuff we've talked about? Because we've talked about some cool stuff.
I guess the only other thing, I mean, I could talk for hours about like the impact of all of this on children and youth unemployment. And I sort of feel like maybe we should do a special episode about some of that stuff, like what, you know, what has happened in people's lives and how will this play out? Because that is such an important part of Mima's role, as we've said. But yeah, I guess one thing that feels exciting, which hasn't happened yet, and we're going to be starting the planning for in earnest soon, is around how to really work closely with the graduates from this year's Mima School of Art and Design to do like a massive project next year, because they haven't had the degree show in the same way that other year groups have had. And so it's not a degree show, but I think we can do something almost like a year on, you know, where are people at and what's...
Oh, I like that idea a lot, yeah.
Because, you know, we always think... I think lots of us do, about that first year out of art school or a creative course is so tough, because suddenly all the things that you have relied on fall away a lot of the time, and you're sort of there with your peer group. Hopefully you've built that well, and, you know, like trying to think about and sustain a practice. So I feel like that could be a really interesting way of working, you know, like keeping a conversation going with the BA and MA students as they graduate, so that they're working towards this quite public moment. And that starts to really, it's like a really interesting way of how can we bridge these two aspects of our work in really, I don't know, like exciting ways that are about sharing how people learn and doing some of that learning in public and having these sort of different routes into the arts and into education, because a lot of our students are from the Tees Valley as well, which is quite interesting and unusual. So that feels good. And hearing from artists has just been such a joy as well. That's like another very simple strand of the work we've been doing.
Yeah.
And I have to say, working with Foundation Press on Nima Zina is just the best. They're like the best artist group.
Checking out their Instagram and they seem really fun. Like they seem not only good at what they do, but really fun.
Such an important word. I was thinking about it as you were speaking earlier, because it's true, like a lot is happening in the world and people want creative and enjoyable things, but they also don't want to be told that they have to self-improve constantly or they need all this to be a good person or what, you know, like it's just having a bit of fun with what you've got around you.
Yeah.
And being like, yeah, just being creative without having to have all the best paints and brushes in the world, which is what I don't know, it just feels like sometimes we sort of fall back on that a little bit in arts education stuff. And this is very much about like DIY, cut it up, collage it, make it your own.
Yeah.
Just have a go. So yeah, I love them.
And that's nice. And that's a bit of a theme with the Mima Making videos that I've seen coming out on YouTube. We haven't had a go yet. But me and Rosie were talking about maybe just like following one of the videos and like showing each other what we made and stuff. So we'll do that and we'll post some stuff so you can have a see more Instagram. But it'll be very cute.
Nice. Yeah, I look forward to seeing that.
Amazing. Well, we're gonna have to wrap up there, I think. But this has been such a
There's so much
nice
more
chat.
We could talk about. I feel like we could just talk for 5 hours and we still have so much more to cover.
I don't know how good the retention rate would be for a 5 hour long podcast.
We have a great time. But yeah. We're rambling on, so it probably would be hard to stop.
And we've covered a lot of ground as well. Jeez. It's great.
I think so. And like, obviously there's ups and downs with working in the current climate, but it is nice to hear like how you've all been kind of like powering through and thinking of new ways to do stuff and how to improve on the kind of structure that the Mima already has. So it's just nice to hear like a reason why I like doing like the podcast with the Mima and with any like gallery or curator or artist is just the behind the scenes look at stuff. So it's always nice to just learn about stuff.
Yeah.
Like how things are done like this. So
thank you for all your secrets.
Mint. Yeah.
It was fun to talk. I mean, forever with you.
It's so nice hearing that. Yeah. Oh, amazing. Well,
If we didn't want to end it before, we definitely don't want to end it now.
No. Yeah.
But unfortunately, all good things must come to an end.
Yes. We would usually end podcasts by talking about something that we're looking forward to doing or seeing, but we can't exactly plan on what we're going to go see in the near future or do in the near future. So again, if you've got any cool good things or any like media recs, like I've just spent I was telling these guys before we recorded, I've had a bad back this week, so I've had the opportunity to watch a lot of TV while I've been lying down. So watched all the Harley Quinn animated series.
Yeah,
it's so good. It's so fun, like so many swears and stuff. Like I know it wasn't like a kid's cartoon, but really it's not. So I would recommend
it looks like it's for kids, which I find it funny when you're watching something that looks really kiddie and then they're like talking about very inappropriate things.
Oh yeah,
especially because it's Batman, so that's a children's like cartoon character. But not at all.
No. Lots of swearing, violence, and cartoon blood. But I would recommend it if you're into all that.
What a pitch.
Yeah, that was quite a shift in tone. Rosie, what about you?
Well, I'm actually halfway through a film at the minute, and I'm going to cry. I'm ready to cry. I want to cry. But out of joy.
Okay.
It's you might have heard it. It's been on Netflix for a while. It's called Crimp Camp.
Oh, I haven't heard of it.
Absolutely watch it. It's about the civil rights movement of disabled people in America. And I have a disabled brother who he has autism, and I've just always been around very disabled people all my life. And I don't really think about it, but I think that's really like framed a lot of how I understand equality and inequality, which is interesting because pro tip for everyone listening, if you are struggling to talk to anyone about equality, whether it be, yeah, race, gender, sexuality, you name it, and someone's really, really not getting it, flip the example to disability because no one can ever argue against inequality with disability. And it's all the same issues. So that's my pro tip because I use that all the time to win debates about equality.
Okay.
So there you go. Crimp Camp is the most heartwarming thing I've ever seen in my life. It's about these hippies in like the 60s set up this camp, summer camp for disabled people. And at this camp, these kids just like they found a whole new way of looking at their disability and understanding their role as a disabled person and like their own abilities, realizing that actually they don't have the problem, it's all the able-bodied people that have the problem and that they need to, like, for lack of a better term, stand up and fight for their rights.
Yeah,
I had to get that in there. It's so I'm mental. Only halfway through, so I'm only up to the bit where they're actually starting to protest and like I'm fighting back the tears. It's so good.
Oh, I'll have to watch it.
Okay, last but not least.
Well, I guess mine are audio things because I find listening a lot easier than reading. So one is a podcast called Museopunks.
Ooh.
Which has it's like really long form, deep conversations around like the ethics of museums, all the stuff that we really touched on lightly today. It's super interesting. And then another is a book called We Were 8 Years in Power by Ta-Nehisi Coates. Interesting discussion of the Obama presidency and from the perspective of now with Trump, how that presidency kind of led to where we are now in some ways, the ways that race politics has been sort of I don't know if I can really describe it any better than that. It's really good and it's really a kind of like very astute reading of the moment we're in through those political years.
Oh, I love that, a bit of reflection.
It's really good. It's really well written.
Ooh,
thank you. Yeah,
nice, amazing. Well, thank you again, Eleanor.
Yes.
I'm going to check out Tasting History now.
Yeah.
You really should. Honestly, it's just a delight. You're such a delightful dude.
We like to leave people with something to look up. This is I'm going to definitely listen to that podcast you recommended, Eleanor. That sounds right up my alley.
Yeah,
awesome. And it's a good name
afterwards
as well.
Okay.
Oh, perfect. We do love a good rant here.
Thank you so much, guys. It's really nice to chat and I hope to speak again soon.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, we'll let you know when we do.
Yeah, like ASAP.
Coming on, if you want to follow the Mima on what they're doing, they're on like Twitter, Instagram, everything at Mima Useful, I believe, for pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to find us, we're at Hey Art What's Good. Thanks for listening. Thanks again for coming on. It's been great.
Look after yourselves, everyone. Take care, stay safe. Bye.